This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. In his first book, Bad Astronomy, author Phil Plait wrote a joke about how to explain to inquiring children why the sky is blue.
You look him or her right in the eye and say, it's because of quantum effects involving Rayleigh scattering combined with the lack of violet photon receptors in our retinae.
Of course, this explanation is way too advanced for most kids, and yet, the out-of-context quote has since been memeified and passed around the web like an inspirational cat poster. Phil Plait is now the man behind the Bad Astronomy blog at Slate, and he joins us now to correct the record and offer a slightly simpler explanation. Phil Plait, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
So in the same chapter, you actually do give a simpler version of why the sky is blue. So how would you suggest explaining that concept to a curious child?
Well, it depends, of course, on the age of the kid. If they're very, very young, that might be difficult on any level to explain. But as they get older and they start to appreciate analogies, you can compare one thing to another thing. And you can say that, for example, the light coming from the sun is like a tree. And if things fall from the tree, like leaves, they get blown around and scatter around and wind up falling all over the yard. But something like a nut or a fruit falls straight down. And that's the analogy. And you say the red light from the sun is like that fruit. It comes right to your eye. But the blue light is like the leaves. And the air in the sky scatters it around, and you wind up seeing it all over the sky. It's not the best analogy. No analogy is ever perfect. But it might give them a little bit of a head start for when they learn about the actual scientific underpinnings of this phenomenon.
Well, yeah, that is something I kind of wonder. There must be something to be said for giving kids the hard-to-understand straight answer in hopes that either they do pick up on it or maybe they seek out the knowledge they need to understand it even better.
Yeah, and you know, it's always going to be a decision by the parent. You want to say, well, some light from the sun goes straight to your eye and some light gets binged around like a ping pong ball or whatever. You can give it a more straight description. You can use analogies, models, or you can, you know, it's okay to sometimes say, you know, that's actually really tough to explain. And at the end of the book chapter, I actually say this, that, you know, look, this is a hard concept. It seems simple. The sky is blue. There it is. Look up. And yet, the scientific basis of this is actually fairly complicated. And for a long time, people didn't understand it. And they had the wherewithal to say, you know what? I don't get this. I don't understand it. Let me see why this happened. And they figured it out. And that's really the most important part about science. When, you know, kids love the idea of being able to figure stuff out. So you tell them, hey, that, you know, that's what science is.
So I read that according to a British survey that was conducted in 2012, that the color of the sky is one of the questions that many, many kids ask their parents about. Another one was, how much does the Earth weigh? Which, as you know, is it technically weighs nothing. It's orbiting the sun. Would you suggest tackling a question like this that could be answered in kind of a few different ways?
Well, yeah, there's a difference between mass and weight, and that's the sort of the crux of this, and that is something has mass, and that just means that it's made of matter, and if you push on it, it's hard to push on. The more matter it has in it, the more it resists getting pushed. Now, if you stick something like that in a gravity field, if you let it sit on the surface of the Earth, it has weight, and that's a force. If you go into space, things are weightless, but they still have mass, and so something like a big heavy piece of equipment that an astronaut's trying to install on the space station, they might be able to push on it, and it will move very slowly at first. But if they keep pushing on it, it will keep moving. It has mass, but not weight. So you could kind of say, hey, if we could put the Earth on a scale, and you know, if it were sitting on the surface of another Earth, then sitting on the scale, it would weigh 6.6 sextillion tons, I think is the weight of it. But actually, because it's orbiting the sun, it's weightless. It's in free fall.
Okay, I've got a good one for you, Phil. Did you ever read Calvin and Hobbes?
All the time. Are you kidding?
Okay, yeah, me too. I was a big fan. And there was a strip that I'll never forget. It was one of my favorite ones where Calvin asks his dad where wind comes from, and his dad says that it's trees sneezing. And Calvin says, he says, really? Or I don't believe you, or something like that. And his dad says, no, but the truth is more complicated. In this case, how might you have answered Calvin's question?
Well, I always, when a kid asks me something like that, I always like to take a second. You know, you don't always have the answers at the tip of your tongue, just like I don't right now. So I'm just saying a bunch of words to you to give my other part of my brain a moment to think about it. And you can say, well, you can't see the air, but you know it's there. When you run, you feel it on your face. When you're on a bicycle, you can feel it pushing against you. And if you're in a car and you stick your hand out the window, it's quite strong. And it turns out air can move, and that's all wind is. You know, why air moves, well, that's a little bit different. And you can, you know, a lot of kids, if you ask them, what happens when you put hot air into a balloon? And they'll say the balloon gets bigger, and it goes up. And you can say, yeah, that's exactly right. And when you heat up air, it gets bigger, and it moves over to where the cold air is, and that's what creates wind. And that's probably about 30% accurate, but it's a good place to start. And you know what? Let me add. A great thing about this is you can always say, I don't know, or I think it's because of this, let's go find out. And then you can look it up. You can go online or try to find some sort of source that you trust. And a lot of parents want to think that, you know, I should just be able to answer all my kids' questions. And the truth, that never happens. You can't answer everything. So go and find out. And that's, I think, the best thing to teach a kid, that science is a way of finding things out.
Yeah, it's funny. These days you can sort of Google just about anything and get an answer pretty quickly. Do you ever worry that maybe our ability to, you know, check a Wikipedia page or something means that we don't dig in? You know, you don't go to the library. You don't get the book. You don't dig into the science maybe as deeply as you would have before. Or is it a great thing that it's, you know, at your fingertips virtually all the time?
Well, like most things with the internet, it's both. It's great that you can find an answer, but you have to be aware that that answer may not be correct. I see mistakes on Wikipedia, not often, but sometimes. When it's a controversial topic, of course, you're going to get opinions from people. So that's good. You know, you can find some information, but you should be aware that it might be wrong, or it might not really be the information you're looking for. You know, I imagine now if somebody were to look up why the sky is blue, they're going to find that meme with this hugely overly complicated explanation that I gave. And let me point out, you know, that was written as a joke. It was supposed to be a joke. And a lot of the people spreading that around the internet understand it's a joke, but a lot of other people don't. And they're saying, oh, my God, what a jerk. He's you know, he's not making this explanation simple for kids at all. And it's like, yes, I know. If in the book, I then explain it more simply and say, go out and figure this out. Always think critically. Always ask, is this right? Does this make sense? Is there another way I can think of this? And that will lead you, if not to the truth, at least to a better perspective and hopefully a better understanding.
Phil Plait is an astronomer, author, and the blogger behind Slate's Bad Astronomy blog. Phil, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank you. This was fun.